Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com. Malik Books is what you
need. Fannie Lou Hamer's America.
Left nobody but the baby.
Been looking forward to this conversation. In this hour, we are pleased to be joined by the filmmakers behind the award-winning documentary film Fannie Lou Hamer's America. Fannie Lou Hamer's niece, Monica Land, and the film's director, Joy Davenport, join us in this hour. The film took more than a decade to make. It is now streaming on several platforms. It's a must-see, and we'll tell you all about that later in this conversation. To my mind, though, Fannie Lou Hamer, as you've heard me say before, is perhaps America's most overlooked, undervalued, and underappreciated freedom fighter. And I look forward to this conversation in this hour about her life and legacy with Monica Land. Monica, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How about you?
I'm doing the best I can. If I complained, I'd be an ingrate. And pleased to have you on, and pleased to have Joy Davenport on as well. Joy, how are you today?
Doing pretty great. Thank you.
Good to have you on as well. Let me start, Monica, by saying congratulations. I know that these things are not easy to do. Documentaries take time. They take money. It's a lot of work. I've done a few documentaries in my career, so I know the work that it takes to pull this forward. And particularly when you're trying to bring to the forefront of our consciousness a freedom fighter like your aunt, who deserves this kind of treatment and deserved it a long time ago. Let me just start by asking why you think it has taken so long for Fannie Lou Hamer to come into the consciousness of so many fellow citizens?
Well, I mean, I think she's always been out there for a small few and for her colleagues, of course. But I think, and perhaps Joy can speak better to this, there's a lot of concentration on the men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you speak about the civil rights movement, people automatically pivot towards Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, and so forth. And Rosa Parks may be one of the few females. And I think that's partly, in my opinion, because of her association with Dr. King. But I don't think there have been enough proponents to champion for Aunt Fannie Lou,
mm-hmm.
You know, as vigorously as they do. And I think a part of that is that she didn't have the family that Dr. King, Medgar Evers had to be that champion for her voice. You know, their family is very vocal about their contributions, and mm-hmm. you have institutes and centers, you know, in their behalf and their name, where they keep that at the forefront. And Aunt Fannie Lou just didn't have that. Her husband was my uncle, and he was basically illiterate, so he didn't have that capability.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping that this film can help to elevate her, as you said at the outset, to where she needs to be, because she certainly was a very, very important part of our history.
I want to ask you in a moment about what you think her legacy is. These are the kind of questions that we oftentimes ask at the end of conversations. What do you think the person's legacy was? I want to come to you and ask you that question now at the outset of this conversation, and you'll see why I'm doing it now and where we will go from here. Let me just say, before I get to that, though, you mentioned Dr. King a moment ago, and I'm glad you did, because this audience knows that I regard Dr. King, my own personal assessment, I regard Dr. King as the greatest American this country's ever produced. They've heard me say that time and time again on this program and elsewhere. I write that in one of my books about Dr. King, that he is, to my mind, the greatest American this country's ever produced. And yet, Dr. King was not perfect. He was not human and divine. He was just human. Dr. King made mistakes, and we will get in this hour, I suspect, to the one time that I took the side of your Aunt Fannie Lou over Dr. King. There was a difference in opinion about a particular issue at a particular political convention, and let me just say Dr. King was wrong, and Fannie Lou Hamer was right. It is one of those instances, again, where I take your aunt's side over Dr. King's side on this particular fight, this particular debate about who was going to be seated at this particular Democratic convention, and your aunt, once again, I repeat, was right. And in retrospect, I believe Dr. King was wrong about his view on that particular issue. Maybe we'll get to that in this hour. But since you raised his name, I wanted to just make that point right now. That said, again, I hear your point loud and clear that she's a woman. Oftentimes, women are overlooked. She didn't have the family to advance the narrative about her legacy. But to your mind, what is the legacy of Fannie Lou? Put another way, why did you spend 10 years trying to get this work done? Obviously, it meant something to you, but what is that legacy?
It did, and it actually took closer to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a lot of that was the problem with funding. As you said, it's difficult to fund a program of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had the interest, but they just didn't want to bring forth the dollars. But I kept doing it because I thought it was important. It was a testament to my family. And that's one of the things that I say often in a film narrative or a grant narrative, that I had never seen. I'd seen several programs where she was interviewed, her colleagues spoke about her, but it was a snippet
mm-hmm.
of her life, and it was always the same people, you know, again, people who knew her, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think that's commendable, but I never saw any of my family members. I'm a family member on the Hamer side, and so I just thought, you know, we're really missing these personal stories. The person who she was prior to activism. She was 44 years old when she got involved in activism.
Mm-hmm.
She had a life before that. And so I wanted to project that. Just as you said about Dr. King, he was imperfect. He was a man. He had faults. You know, she did as well. And so for 44 years, she did that. You know, she was a very hardworking person. And so knowing the sacrifices, hearing the stories from my family of what drove her to that point, I wanted people to know that, to see that. And so we really didn't get a chance to project that as much as I wanted in the film, because with our goal of just using archival footage, using her voice, she didn't talk a lot about her family. She told a familiar story of how she was forced into picking cotton when she was 6 years old, but getting into, you know, her teenage years, and all of that, and even her early marriage, her first marriage, we just didn't have the footage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted an outlet for people to know more about her. You know, she was actually very vulnerable. We have these personal letters that show that she doubted at some point what she was doing. She really wondered if what she was doing, you know, made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
She showed a human side that people just don't get to see. I mean, certainly if you see the film, she comes off as this huge personality, you know, that was just determined to get things accomplished, and she did. But then you have this woman, you know, that was married and had children, and you know, and those weaknesses and those insecurities. And so just wanting people to see that, to know that, hey, yeah, you know what? She was a human being. She did have feelings on the whatever. And so that was part of it. And just wanting people to remember her, because not only was she active, I don't want to say civil rights because she said human rights, but she was also a humanitarian. She did a lot for people. She got people jobs. She found people housing and clothing, and I mean, she just did so much, and people are just not aware of it. So I wanted people to know.
I'm glad you made that point, because while she becomes well known, or certainly known in the era of civil rights, she was one of the early persons in Black to not just use the term civil rights, but human rights. And so I'm glad you put a finer point on that. I was going to get to that. I'm glad you beat me to it. But it is significant that it's this Black woman from Mississippi. And by the way, as many of you know, I am from Mississippi, so I take pride in this Mississippian finally getting the respect that she deserves. But she was out front calling it human rights, not just civil rights. And so in many ways, she was ahead of her time. So pleased to have in this hour as our guest, Monica Land, the voice you just heard. She is the niece of Fannie Lou Hamer and the film's director, Joy Davenport. You'll hear her voice when we come forward, celebrating the life and legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer. This documentary, Fannie Lou Hamer's America, streaming now on a variety of platforms. More about that when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Be sure to like and follow Tavis Smiley at The Real Tavis Smiley.
And get Twitter updates
at Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues when we come forward.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore, specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Less BS per broadcast, fewer microaggressions per megawatt. KBLA Talk 1580.
Fannie Lou Hamer's America is a documentary, a powerful piece of work. I highly recommend it. We'll tell you more about all the places it's streaming now and where you can see it as we move through this conversation. But it's a powerful piece of work about the person I regard as I said earlier, perhaps the most overlooked, underappreciated, undervalued activist in the history of this country. And I don't take that statement lightly. So pleased to be joined by her niece in this hour, one of the filmmakers, Monica Land, and the film's director, Joy Davenport. So, Joy, let me get you in this conversation. Again, it's a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of effort to spend on a particular project. Why were you so determined to get this project about Fannie Lou Hamer completed?
It just feels more urgent every year, and it felt more urgent every year that we worked on it. We constantly were saying, this is the year we got to get it out, because it suddenly became more newsworthy because our country took a turn towards hard racism, you know, masks off, you know, fascism, the kinds of stuff that we're seeing happen right now that Mrs. Hamer fought against during her lifetime. And somehow every year the pressure gets higher. Every year the gains that were made get clawed back. And it just feels like her voice is so necessary as, you know, a prophet of American democracy. She inspired me, and I was gifted with this opportunity to work with Monica to bring her voice to the rest of the country. And, you know, once you hear her voice, once you hear her message, you just can't not join her.
Yeah. As a filmmaker, let me ask you a few questions. Before I do that, though, when you said a moment ago that the more you worked on it year after year, the more urgent its release became, are there parallels between what you are seeing now and what you were seeing as you were doing the documentary, parallels between then and her time, the fights that she was
engaged
in?
There are so many.
Yeah.
So many parallels. It's, you know, we talk about the Citizens Council, the White Citizens Council in the movie. And what you see now nationally with one of our major political parties is just the Citizens Council playbook, where you have the kind of respectful political wing that's eroding of people's rights. And then you have the kind of street thugs like the Klan who are out there punching people in the face. And it's, you know, they were a local concern in the South for a while, and now they've gone national. This is exactly what Mrs. Hamer fought against.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned her voice, Joy, and I want to get your take as a filmmaker. Again, I noticed like to sit in the editing bay and to listen to the voices of persons in a particular documentary over and over and over again. I'm reading a book now about Dr. King, and we're going to have a conversation with the author of this book in short order on this program. But it's a book specifically about King's voice. So many books have been written about Dr. King, but here's a book about his voice, about his style, about his tenor, and what that voice meant and means to people then and now the world over. But it's a book specifically about the stylings, the vocal stylings of Dr. King. When you hear the voice of Fannie Lou Hamer, as you did time and time again in the editing bay putting this together, when you hear that voice, Joy, what are you hearing?
I'm just hearing the realest person I've ever encountered. I'm hearing somebody who speaks with the cadence of a preacher, but also with the pain of lived experience of being a black woman in America. Mm. And so she's able to do multiple things at once. She is able to reach for the spiritual and the abstract and the ideal. And she's also able to ground it in her own experience and what she lived. And it's just impossible to deny that this is her life. This is what she went through. And so her voice encapsulates it both in the way that she speaks, the words that she chooses, the metaphors and the stories that she tells. It combines into this incredible, powerful narrative. And you just hear it the moment you hear her voice.
Yeah. I am not certain there is a particular profile of one who becomes a renowned activist. Dr. King's journey was quite different than that of Malcolm X. Malcolm's journey, quite different than that of Rosa Parks. Her journey, different than that of Fannie Lou Hamer. We could do this all day long. So there is no particular profile, obviously, of one who becomes an activist. But what did you learn, and what is it about her backstory To Monica's point, she didn't even become an actress until she was 40, until she was 44. What is it about the backstory of Fannie Lou Hamer that you think prepared her for this moment of becoming this activist in the way that she was, and the way that she did?
I think a lot of the things that she was involved with in her life, even before people came to call her an activist, it was activism. You know, mm-hmm. she worked with her community to build lives, to build people. And so once she was introduced to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and those other groups, and she was introduced to these ideas about the rights to vote and the rights to assemble publicly, she just kept doing what she was already doing, but under this banner of activism. So I think that just she was an original community organizer. She was a person who, for survival, had to help her community organize. And then when outsiders came in wanting to provide the tools, she was ready and waiting and took those tools the first night that she met them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was happening, for those who haven't seen the film but will, what was happening in her 44th year of living that pushed her into this space?
Well, so the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was coming into Mississippi to help people register to vote. And so locally for her, this was kind of a new thing, you know, these outsiders coming in and offering to help. But it's funny in a not very funny way that there was nothing new happening. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing that she'd been dealing with all her life, of just the oppressive white supremacy of Mississippi. But the spark that kind of lit the fire was that there was an organization of students who were willing to do what the larger organizations like the SCLC were not willing to do, which was to go straight to the local people, ask them what they needed, and then empower them to get it. So over a short period of time, relatively speaking, the people of the Mississippi Delta got organized. And what happened was the passage of multiple laws and federal interference in the racist state system to allow black people to register and vote en masse.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mississippi, let me just pivot right quick. There's a huge rally, a mass gathering, a mass movement in Jackson, Mississippi today, literally as we speak. They are protesting in Jackson about that water issue, that contaminated water issue. You recall that we had Rukia Lumumba on this program some days ago, the sister of the mayor there. Her brother is the mayor. Her father was the mayor. Rukia was on this program some days ago talking about this water issue, and everybody in the country now is aware that Jackson is the new Flint, where all these black people in the state, in the city of Jackson, have been disregarded by the powers that be in that state. And these black people are having a very difficult time finding clean water to drink. And so all around the country, people are sending bottled water to Jackson to help these citizens, these black citizens, navigate through this crisis. And so I raised that as a quick pivot, Joy, because we were talking earlier about the parallels between what black folk were being having to endure then, the ways they were being put upon then, the ways they're being put upon today. And that story just popped in my head because I know that a lot of my friends are in Jackson today protesting this crisis for these black fellow citizens in that city. Mississippi is a character in this story, make no mistake about it. As a film director, how do you see Mississippi as a character in the telling of the story of Fannie Lou Hamer?
I see Mississippi as kind of the original American story, the kind of the story that a lot of people are trying to keep out of classrooms today. It's sort of where the veil, the illusion of America falls away, and you just see the dirt that it was grown out of. And that is essentially the extreme exploitation of black and other people of color and by white people and by this white supremacist system. And the situation in Jackson is such an excellent example of how those parallels work, mm-hmm. because it's exactly like how Mrs. Hamer organized her Freedom Farm. And it was successful for a few years. It was a bunch of folks who came together to make a cooperative to feed and clothe and provide, you know, housing and jobs for the folks there. But when it came time to get federal or state level assistance, well, that always got sent to the white organizations. They were only enriching themselves and were specifically stood up to keep the black organizations from getting that funding. So you look at how Jackson has ended up. There are local people there who know what they need, and they know what they need to do, but the money never makes it to them because it ends up being diverted to people like, you know, Brett Favre's volleyball stadium. It doesn't end up in the hands of the people because the system is designed so that it will be that way. So when I see Mississippi as a character and I think about how to represent it in a film, this is the oldest American story, and it's the one of extraction, exploitation, and destruction at the expense of the poor people who built the country.
I got a couple minutes left here before news, traffic, and sports, and we'll continue, of course, on the other side, Joy. But you heard Monica say earlier that there was some parts of the story that you all wanted to tell, and the footage just didn't support it. But to my mind, there's a lot of great archival footage in this film. I was just blown away and surprised by all the footage of Fannie Lou Hamer, and I consider myself a decent student of her work, all the footage that I had never seen before. Tell me about the search. I'm asking a filmmaker's question because I'm curious about the search to find all this archival footage of Fannie Lou Hamer.
Oh, that was, it was equally an adventure and an odyssey. It was an ordeal. there was so much stuff, but it was very difficult to access, and we were always finding new stuff. So on the one hand, as a historian, I just want to dig into everything. But then on the other hand, as a filmmaker, we've got schedules and budgets and deadlines. So we were finding new things, you know, weeks before broadcast that we were trying to get into the film. Because once you pull one thread, you find other ones. And sometimes you'll have a disappointment where you can't get the rights to put something on the screen, so you have to make a change, but then you find something else. There really is a wealth of information. But to what Monica was saying, some of the most crucial human bits of her life, the most sensitive, vulnerable parts of herself, she did not get up and say on a stage, and she did not say to oral historians. You know, she would write it in letters. And so as a filmmaker, that creates a dilemma. If we're only going to tell it in her voice and she never said it in her voice, then it's difficult to put it on screen. And this is also one of the dilemmas of how she was remembered, that a lot of people only want to focus on what she did in 1964, when her whole life is so illustrative of the American experience, the experience of Black women or even just poor people writ large. But a lot of that stuff got overwritten by the more famous voices or the people who had an agenda or the people who just didn't like to hear a so-called uneducated woman speak on a stage.
We'll come back to 1964. I mentioned earlier the one time that I'm siding with Fannie Lou Hamer over Dr. King even, and I regard him as a great American. But we'll come back to 1964 and unpack that story and a great deal more when we continue with Monica Land and Joy Davenport talking about the award-winning documentary film Fannie Lou Hamer's America. You're listening to Unapologetically Progressive, KBLA Talk 1580.
This is KBLA Talk 1580, where we turn red lights to green lights and keep it moving.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore, specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
This is KBLA Talk 1580, where hate loses and love wins.
It occurs to me as I listen to that promo about our series in October, Agenda for America and African American Perspective, these four conversations starting October 6th, every Thursday in October, as I discussed earlier in today's program. We are pleased to be bringing you these national conversations that will be heard not just on this station, but on urban stations all across the country. We are producing this series, but Thursday, October 6th, we commence with the state of Black women in America. The next Thursday, the state of Black youth in America. The next Thursday, state of Black men in America. The final Thursday, why we can't wait, the urgency of now. Reva Martin hosts the Black women conversation. Dominique DePrima hosts the Black youth panel. Zoe Williams, the Black male panel, and I will wrap up the month hosting the final panel, bringing all this together. But it occurred to me during that break when I heard that promo that October 6th is the birthday of Fannie Lou Hamer. Fannie Lou Hamer born in Mississippi on October 6th. So the day that we have the State of Black Women conversation moderated by Reva is the birthday of one Fannie Lou Hamer. And that's who we are discussing in this hour. The documentary film, the award-winning documentary film, is called Fannie Lou Hamer's America. Now streaming on a variety of platforms, I highly recommend that you check it out. Before news, traffic, and sports, we were just queuing up just teeing up the conversation about Fannie Lou Hamer that most of us know. If you know anything about Fannie Lou Hamer, it's probably, as the film's director, Joy Davenport, suggested a moment ago, it's probably 1964. So for those, Joy, who don't know what happened in 1964 and how Fannie Lou Hamer came to national prominence, even though Lyndon Johnson, as president, then called a press conference to try to block the national news networks from covering her speech, her appearance before this committee. He literally, the president, wanted to out-strategize. He did not want the country to see Fannie Lou Hamer. So here's an uneducated black woman from the Delta who's risen to such prominence that the president of the United States is trying to block the national news media from seeing her. It didn't work. The word still got out about this powerful speech she gave. But again, for those who are not familiar with what happened in 1964, George, tell us a bit about that. We'll bring Monica back in a moment.
Well, she was there in Atlantic City for the Democratic National Convention to argue that the state of Mississippi was too racist to be seated there because they had their official Democratic Party that was all white, except they knew that in the state of Mississippi, black people were not allowed to vote, and so they were being excluded from the entire system. So Mrs. Hamer created, you know, it with people in Mississippi, with SNCC and COFO and CORE, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, as an official protest to follow the rules, the actual bylaws of the Democratic Party to the letter, and then arrive at the Democratic National Convention and say, we did the right thing, and the state party did the wrong thing. And her testimony, as you said, was so threatening and embarrassing to President Johnson because he wanted to show unity, and these Freedom Democrats, they were there to shake things up. And he inadvertently, Streisand affected himself because by blocking her testimony from the national broadcast, all of the news organizations realized this was a big deal. And so they played her remarks in their entirety on the evening news. So all he did was amplify her.
Yeah,
but she was there to make the case that Mississippi was too racist to be officially involved with Democratic politics, and she was right.
Yeah. What do you make of the fact, Monica, you are the niece of Fannie Lou Hamer, what do you make of the fact that your aunt in that moment was delivering a message that was so powerful and so resonant that she literally found herself in a situation where the president of the United States was trying to block her message from getting out?
Well, that again just speaks to the power of her voice. And both Joy and I knew activist Lawrence Guyot well. Joy knew him much better than I did. But mm-hmm. in speaking with him, they were talking about who, you know, would be the best person to speak at that time. I don't believe he was there, but he said he was glad he was there because she was the person needed at that moment, at that time, because she was raw, just like Joy said, perhaps one of the best community organizers there was. I mean, she identified with so many people because she was a sharecropper. She'd spent her life in the cotton field. And so she could describe the plight of poor black people in the Delta like no one else could. And so to have her get up and speak her truth, including what had happened to her in the Winona jail, where she was brutally beaten at the hands of law enforcement officials. No one could relate that as she could. She had such a raw emotion when she finished that testimony that she walked away wiping tears from her eyes. It was just that raw to her. And so to know that she could do that to make a point, you know, it's one that I'm very proud of. I'm also tremendously sad, of course, that she had to go through that. And she went through so many things, again, prior to activism. And that's what this film is all about, showing people that, you know what, this struggle, she was a part of it.
Yeah.
In fact, she was in the very forefront, you know, of this struggle. So much so that, and Joy and I and others have spoken about this, that if she were a man, she would have likely been assassinated. That's how powerful she was.
Mm-hmm.
But because she was a woman, she was not. But she was very close to that at the Winona jail. And she really believed that it was Medgar Evers' assassination that saved her life,
yeah.
their lives.
Yeah.
And so she was very, very, very powerful. And again, Johnson knew that. And he used some, you know, some lame commemoration of the 9 months of President John F. Kennedy's assassination to divert that attention from her. But again, it backfired tremendously, and
yeah.
she was heard. And from that point on, notably, she became one of the most sought-after speakers that there was in the civil rights movement. In fact, Joy spoke about it, there is so much footage that we could not use. We just did not have the budget, did not have the time.
Yeah.
But she was on so many television talk shows. She was on David Frost. She was on At Random with a Earth Cups in It. She was on Tony Brown's Black Journal. She was on all kinds of news programs. She was sought after, even though, you know, she was seemingly uneducated, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But she had a lot to say, and no one could say it as she could.
No one could. I mean, she gives this testimony before the Credentials Committee at the DNC convention in Atlantic City. And by the way, we had as a guest on this program earlier today, the chair of the Democratic Party. Fascinating how things change over time. So the chair of the DNC right now is a black man named Jamie Harrison out of South Carolina. So the Democratic Party has its second African-American chairman. Donna Brazile was interim at one point, but Ron Brown, of course, the first black man to be elected chair of that party. So here we are talking about Fannie Lou Hamer speaking before the Credentials Committee at the DNC in Atlantic City on August 22nd, 1964. That same party now has a black man as its chair. But when she was testifying, to the point that Monica made earlier, when she was testifying that day, she still had a blood clot behind her eye from being so severely beaten by the police in this jail. And that isn't lost on me. George, let me come to you as a filmmaker, because this always fascinates me every time I see this footage of her testifying in 1964. And I'm looking at some pictures right now here in the radio studio to just focus again on what I've seen 1,000 times. When you're testifying in a major committee hearing like this, imagine this is 2022. She's got her hair done. She's got makeup. She's got handlers. You know where I'm going, Joy. She has all of this stuff that's been done for this presentation that's about to be seen on national television, on all the news networks. And Fannie Lou Hamer walks in there, and I say this lovingly, but she's sweating. Her face looks shiny, a little greasy. Her hair is not particularly done by some stylist. She walked in there as she was, no pretense, and she slayed it. And as we've already established, everybody in the country from David Frost across the board wanted to interview Fannie Lou Hamer. But there's something about that footage that always speaks to me. I've never seen anyone testify before a major committee that was more real, Joy, than that moment. I mean real all the way around.
She just laid her soul bare for the entire nation, which she should not have had to do. Mm-hmm. But she was there on a mission, and she was going to accomplish it, no matter what. You know, and they tried to stop her every step of the way. Even the official Democratic Party tried to stop her there in Atlantic City, and she was not going to be stopped. So there's one particular clip. It's right before she sits down that really speaks to me. It's when she's announced by Joe Rao, who was their attorney. And nobody in the room seemed to even be aware that she was there. She has to, like, push her way through the photographers and reporters, and she's limping to the stand. And as soon as she sat down, she commanded that entire room. But before she sat down, nobody even recognized her. And that was her power, is if you hear and see her, if her testimony is present, then you cannot help but be pulled into it. And that's exactly what President Johnson was afraid of, and the Democratic Party at large was afraid of.
Yeah.
Because just seeing her presence, the way she moves and speaks, the way that she's not polished, she's not reading from a script, she's just reading from her heart. And that's what she would say when she would speak. She doesn't prepare her remarks. She just sits down and says what's on her mind.
Yeah. As you mentioned, she walked with a limp. She was not a person of stature. She was short and round and walked with a limp, and we say uneducated. I put it this way, she was unschooled, but she was wise, and she had a whole lot to say. And on that historic day in 1964, August 22nd, she laid it out, and the whole country heard from this black woman in a way that they'd never seen a black woman present. And when we come forward, I'll tell you very quickly and very briefly about why she was right that day and Dr. King was wrong. We'll continue our conversation with Monica Land and Joy Davenport, talking about the documentary, Fannie Lou Hamer's America, when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
We've got a lot to talk about.
Good thing we've got 3 hours.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. Interrogating your assumptions.
And expanding your inventory of ideas.
Let's get back to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580. 80.
This August 22nd, 1964 speech before the Credentials Committee of the DNC is where Fannie Lou Hamer famously said, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." A lot of great quotes that come courtesy of Fannie Lou Hamer, but that one people tend to know, that I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's what she uttered that day in front of the Credentials Committee at the DNC. It really was, in fact, the speech that changed the course of black voting rights in this country. And the speech isn't given enough credit, but it did, in fact, change, to my mind, the course, the conversation, the struggle for black voting rights in this country, which we're still fighting for, sadly, in 2022. To have that codified in the law once and for all. But her speech made a huge impact, had a huge impact on this conversation as we know it. Very briefly here, so Dr. King was wrong about the fact that he thought essentially that Fannie Lou Hamer was pushing a little hard. He was okay with some plan to seat somebody, but she was demanding that this white delegation, this all-white delegation out of Mississippi that was full of segregationists, avowed segregationists, needed to be changed. And without going into all the details, I write about it in my book, Death of a King. Dr. King thought that Fannie Lou Hamer, in some regards, was pushing a little too hard, being a bit too aggressive. And he thought there was some compromise to be reached between Fannie Lou Hamer's party and the Democratic Party established then. And Fannie Lou Hamer would hear none of it. Her demands were what they were. And Dr. King thought that there was, again, some middle ground to be achieved. And Mrs. Hamer wasn't having it. And in that regard, history, I think, will record that she was right in that moment. And with all due respect to my hero, Dr. King was wrong in that moment. So, again, we could talk about that for hours. I digress. But I want to just put a finer point on why I said earlier that she was on the right path. And he, in that moment, was a bit too willing to compromise, and she would have none of it. You gave us a sense earlier, Monica, of the ways in which her profile just blew up after this speech and all the appearances that she made and the like. I am curious, though, as to how, as a 44-year-old woman, when she becomes an activist with a family, with kids, she found the time, the space, the energy, the wherewithal to do all of this.
It was a sacrifice. And again, Joy, being one of the best Fannie Lou Hamer historians can speak to that. But she did. She sacrificed her life. She sacrificed her marriage. She left my uncle to raise the girls that they had adopted because she was on the road all the time. She was always doing something for someone. And when she was home, there was a constant stream of people at her door who needed her to advocate for something or to do something because there was just so much injustice, and they knew that she could be the voice to speak for them. And so that sacrifice also came with her health. If I'm correct, and Joy may have to speak to it, she knew about the lump in her breast, but she did not take the time to address it, because she was doing so much for other people. Yeah. And then when it got to that advanced stage, it was too late to do anything about it. And so this, again, speaks to why I wanted to do this film, because she was so self-sacrificing. She gave herself for other people. And even with the Freedom Farm, and the sad thing about it, and this is what we're trying to do on our website, Fannie Lou Hamer's America, is to tell or continue her story where the film cut off. But the sad, and actually something that's very common, is when she became ill and she was down and she couldn't do a lot of things for people, they left her. They abandoned her. When she needed them, they weren't around. Mm. And so she just truly, her time in the hospital in her final days was just truly, truly sad.
No, it is sad to hear that. And yet, her legacy lives on for all that she did accomplish. Our remaining moments with Monica Land and Joy Davenport and the film Fannie Lou Hamer's America, when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Courage is contagious. We're KBLA Talk 1580. Let's unpack a little bit more with Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues right now.
Just a few minutes left in this conversation about the award-winning documentary Fannie Lou Hamer's America, brought to you by filmmakers Monica Land, the niece of Fannie Lou Hamer, and the film's director, Joy Davenport. It is streaming now on a variety of platforms, including Roku, Apple TV, World Channel, so many others. But there are a number of places, if you look up Fannie Lou Hamer's America, to see this award-winning documentary now streaming again on places like Roku, Apple TV, where I saw it, World Channel, and other places. So you should definitely do yourself a favor and check out this award-winning documentary about the life and legacy of the person, again, who I regard as perhaps the most underappreciated, unknown, undervalued, overlooked activist in the history of this nation, and I do not say that lightly. Joy Davenport, what for you has been the joy of bringing this documentary to life?
I've spent over a decade with Mrs. Hamer at this point, and it felt very selfish. I felt very, very blessed, but at the same time, her voice is for all of us in America. So the joy for me has really been creating a platform, you know, being her megaphone, doing everything that I could do to bring her words to new generations of the country and old generations who knew her then, so that we can all talk about her and continue to carry her torch forward.
Yeah. And Monica, what is it that you hope people will take away about your Aunt Fannie Lou?
Just to remember the sacrifices, the struggle. And I believe it was her that said, freedom is not free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, young people today, they take so much for granted. We all take so much for granted, but it came at a great cost. And just to appreciate those who walked before us, those who were able to open those doors, it was not easy. And there were so many sacrifices made, but they did it for us. And to just show that appreciation, you know, if not just by remembering them, talking about them, keeping their story, their history alive.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the quote now, and I can't recall her exact height. What was she about? What was her? 4'7"? How was it?
5'4".
I'm sorry.
If I fall, I'll
That's it. So I love that quote. Monica, give it to me straight. I love that quote.
That's actually, they have a statue, but she says, if I fall, I'll fall 5 feet, 4 inches forward toward, for freedom.
That's exactly right. I love the, I got the height wrong. I'm glad you told me. I'm thinking of Harriet Tubman, another great freedom fighter who was barely 4 feet tall. But I love that quote from Fannie Lou Hamer. If I fall, I'm going to fall 5 feet, 4 inches forward in the fight for freedom. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love this documentary as well. It's called Fannie Lou Hamer's America. It is brought to you by her niece, filmmakers Monica Land, and the film director, Joy Davenport. Ladies, you did an amazing job here. I know it took a while, but an amazing job. Take a bow. It deserves all the awards that it is winning, and I know many, many more people will see it now that it's streaming on Roku, Apple TV, World Channel, and many other places. Thank you, thank you, thank you both for doing this, and thank you for the chance to talk to you about it. I appreciate having you on the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
It is my great honor. That's our show for today. Back tomorrow morning, Lord willing, to do it all over again, 9 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific time. Time now for the Millionaires Roundtable with Lynn Richardson, followed by Ahead of the Crypto Curve with Naja Roberts. It's the KBLA Midday Money Chain. Old money, new money, it don't matter. We got you covered here on KBLA Talk 1580. Until tomorrow morning, thanks for tuning in. And as always, keep the faith.
Malik Books.
I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.